Lecture 33, Independent Bangladesh.
While the land that is now the new nation of Bangladesh is agriculturally rich, geographically it is roughly the size of Iowa. Yet Bangladesh contains the world's eighth largest population. That is about half of the entire population of the U.S. So imagine that half of all Americans moved to Iowa, increasing its population 50 times over. In addition to extreme population density, Bangladesh faces high poverty rates and an inefficient and corrupt government. Periodically, the entire economy is shut down by often violent political protests. Further, there are new challenges like rising sea levels caused by climate change, which will flood its highly productive southern coast. Still, the men and women of Bangladesh have always proven themselves to be resilient and enterprising. Indeed, they endured three disrupting partitions in 1905, 1947, and 1971. Each entailed major political, social, and cultural instabilities. Even today, Bangladesh is racked by questions about the essence of the nation. The Bengali language has long and sophisticated oral and literary as well as artistic traditions. So one of the vital parts of Bangladeshi identity is the Bengali cultural heritage. Starting about 800 years ago, most people became Muslim, especially in the eastern regions. But they retained many of their pre-Islamic Bengali customs. But their Islamic and their Bengali identities sometimes clash. Where the broad Ganges and Brahmaputra and Meghna rivers drain out into the sea, they developed a broad delta called Bengal. Most of the soil is alluvial, rich with nutrients and minerals eroded away from the Himalayan mountains and the North Indian plain. Once the dense forests were cleared away and the local population learned how to master wet rice agriculture, this became one of the most agriculturally productive regions in all of South Asia. In addition to agriculture, the people of Bengal centuries ago mastered cotton and silk weaving and other crafts. These hand-manufactured products were greatly desired in markets across North India and overseas, first in Southeast Asia and from the 16th century onward in Europe. So some of the early European commercial settlements by the Portuguese, Dutch, Danes, English, and French grew up along the main riverine trading route running through Bengal. The city of Calcutta, which the English East India Company obtained from the Mughal governor in 1690, became the capital for British imperial expansion in India. Over the 19th century, Calcutta grew into the second largest metropolis of the British Empire, exceeded only by London. British and Indian officials and merchants and Indian landlords made Calcutta famous as the city of palaces. This was the site of the Bengal Renaissance, led by the famous Ram Mohan Roy. But while the Bengali and British elite prospered, many of the weavers and tenant farmers were impoverished. The new global economy of the British Empire shifted the production of cloth to industrial factories in Britain. Some of the most devastating famines in human history periodically killed millions of Bengalis, mostly those living in the countryside. The most recent of these came in 1943, when the British wartime orders stripped Bengal's countryside of grain and boats in the face of looming Japanese invasion. About 3 million Bengalis died. In addition, the summer monsoon that annually brings vast amounts of rain, which is valuable for rice, also brings flooding. Overflowing rivers almost annually inundate about a third of Bangladesh. In 1998, about 60% of the country was submerged. This inundation adds fertility to the soil, but it also displaces millions. Every year or so, the monsoon brings a major cyclone, what Americans would call a hurricane, that wipes out a part of the Bengal coast. As sea levels rise inexorably, the force and extent of this coastal flooding is only increasing. So the people of Bengal have historically endured perilous lives, both from the natural environment and also from political disruptions. Recall that in 1905, the British colonial Raj divided majority Muslim East Bengal from predominantly Hindu West Bengal. This was the first of Bengal's three partitions during the 20th century. The British justified this on purely administrative grounds, since the province had been so huge. But most scholars agree that this was really a British political effort to weaken the Indian national leaders based in Calcutta. Many of these were Hindu landlords with landed estates in the east. So this 1905 partition put those estates in a different province. In addition, the newly formed Western Bengal province was diluted by the addition of non-Bengali territories. This first British partition thus created a separate province of East Bengal for Muslim politicians. Many of these were conservative landlords. They looked to the British Raj to protect them from the Hindu majority in the rest of British India. Indeed, the Muslim League movement held its inaugural meeting in East Bengal in 1906. So this separation of Bengalis into Hindus versus Muslims was part of the British political strategy of divide and rule. Widespread popular protests convinced the British Raj that this partition was a major blunder. So just 7 years later, the British Raj pushed East and West Bengal back together. Nonetheless, the idea of a separate political administration for Muslim Bengalis had been established. The British Raj next tried a different way to weaken the Calcutta-based Indian nationalists by shifting the imperial capital of India to a newly built planned city of New Delhi. While Bengali politicians continued to be active in the nationalist movement, many of the new leaders came from other regions, like the Nehru family based in North India, and Mohandas Gandhi and Muhammad Ali Jinnah based on the West Coast. In August 1947, as the British left, they partitioned Bengal once again. This time, Muslim nationalists led by Jinnah and the Muslim League demanded this partition. These Muslim politicians had wanted all of Bengal to be included in their new country of Pakistan, but they only got the eastern half of Bengal. But in this partition, about 1 to 2 million Hindu Bengalis, including many of the landlords and other social, educational, and economic leaders, fled to India. But millions of Hindus remain. Today, about 12% of the population in Bangladesh is Hindu. In contrast, almost all non-Muslims fled or were killed in Pakistan's western wing, leaving Hindus only 3% of the population there. Additionally, many millions of non-Bengali Muslims also fled east from North India into East Pakistan. Unlike the situation in West Pakistan, many of these immigrants did not bring high levels of educational or commercial resources. Even today, many of these immigrants from North India are termed Biharis. They speak their own dialect of Hindi and follow distinctive cultural practices. Many of them still feel alienated by the vast majority of the population that is culturally Bengali. The forested Chittagong Hill Tracts also were incorporated into East Pakistan in 1947. But those territories are the homeland of various communities of Adivasis, or the so-called tribals. Their forest-based culture and economy are historically quite different from the Bengali rice farmers and artisans. Plus, many of these Adivasis were converted to Protestant Christianity by British missionaries during the 19th and early 20th centuries. So they were religiously distinct from Bengali Muslims, as well as linguistically and economically separate. They comprised less than 1% of the population. For decades, their cultural, religious, economic, and geographic distance from the majority Muslim Bengali population has led them to struggle for more autonomy. The 1947 partition also cut across Bengal's economy. One of the most valuable crops of East Bengal, jute, had been processed in factories in Calcutta into ropes and hemp cloth, still widely used in shipping bags. Now the two complementary parts of this economy were severed. The East still exports jute and rice, but mostly as raw materials with low profit margins. Recently, Bangladesh has made itself a major exporter of ready-made garments. During the quarter century that East Pakistan was joined to West Pakistan, many Muslim Bengalis felt impoverished, alienated, and demeaned. The economic arrangements between West and East Pakistan greatly benefited the Western wing. Due to East Pakistan's rich agricultural production, its exports generated the large majority of Pakistan's foreign exchange. But only a small proportion of the Pakistani government's investment in infrastructure and services went to the eastern wing. This meant an annual transfer of wealth from the eastern to the western wing. Further, the vast expenditures on the Pakistani army and the costly 1965 war against India both seemed ill-advised to many East Pakistanis. Since Bengalis lived both in West Bengal state within India and also in East Bengal within Pakistan, this made India appear less threatening to many East Pakistanis. Remember, almost all the political, economic, and cultural leadership of Pakistan favored that nation's western wing. Very few Bengali politicians rose up prominently in Pakistani governments. Also, army generals ruled Pakistan for a quarter century until 1971. Yet only a tiny percentage of the entire Pakistan Army Officer Corps was Bengali. Likewise, the powerful Pakistan Administrative Civil Service included very few Bengalis. In order to minimize even limited democratic voting in East Pakistan, politicians in the West tried to devise various strategies. Among them was the 1955 one-unit plan that would unite all the provinces in West Pakistan to try to counterbalance the one province in East Pakistan. Further, many West Pakistanis considered Easterners to be culturally inferior. The Islamic practices of Bengalis appeared to many West Pakistanis as unorthodox and heavily tainted by Hinduism. Likewise, the Bengali language derived from Sanskrit and was shared by Indian Bengalis. So it appeared to many West Pakistanis as unworthy of this new Islamic nation. As you'll remember, one of Muhammad Ali Jinnah's early acts as Pakistan's new Governor General was to travel 1,000 miles to the country's eastern wing and direct them to give up Bengali and adopt Urdu. Indeed, Urdu became the official language of Pakistan, although most Bengalis did not speak it. For instance, Pakistan's national anthem is in highly Persianized Urdu, with hardly a single word intelligible to Bengali speakers. So from the creation of West and East Pakistan in 1947, many East Pakistanis felt themselves to be an internal colony, with only frustrated hopes for independent national self-determination. In response, during the early 1950s, many Bengalis rose up around their proud cultural heritage through a highly politicized Bengali language movement. But its peaceful street protests met heavy-handed police repression. The language movement continued even after 1954, when Bengali was officially made an additional national language for Pakistan. Out of these protests, the Awami, or People's League, was founded in 1953 as an expression of Bengali political aspirations. But free and democratic expression in Pakistan was highly limited. Under the regime of West Pakistani General Iskandar Mirza, most of the Awami League's leaders were imprisoned. As this party's leaders were sporadically released, Sheikh Mujibur Rahman emerged as the reconstituted Awami League's most prominent figure from the early 1960s onward. Mujibur Rahman had long been a student leader, very active in the Bengali language movement, often jailed for his activism. In the face of continued West Pakistani military rule, Mujibur Rahman set out his six-point plan manifesto, which he strongly advocated from 1966 onward. This plan proposed a more federal system for Pakistan with greater autonomy for each wing. East and West Pakistan would each have control over its own foreign trade and fiscal policies with separate currencies. Each would have independent paramilitary forces. The relatively weak federal government would be exclusively limited to foreign diplomatic affairs and national defense. But that federal government would be elected on a strictly one-person, one-vote basis, where the population majority in East Pakistan would finally be respected and indeed would lead. So this was not a call for full secession, but it did demand a radical transformation of how Pakistan's government actually worked, shifting much political and economic power from Westerners to Easterners. In addition to Mujibur Rahman, there were many politicians who sought more fundamental transformations of society through land redistribution and socialist ownership of the means of production. So in many ways, Mujibur Rahman had to balance his appeal between more fiery rhetoric and more pragmatic programs. In what proved to be a miscalculation in 1969, the latest West Pakistani military dictator, General Yahya Khan, ordered the election of a new assembly in the following year. This actually proved to be the most free democratic election ever held in Pakistan to that point. This election opened up the possibility for a new kind of Pakistan, which raised widespread support in East Pakistan for Mujibur Rahman and his Awami League. Coincidentally, a month before the election, a terrible storm left hundreds of thousands of Bengalis dead and millions more displaced. The situation was made much worse since the Pakistani government had not provided adequate advance warning and accomplished little in the way of rehabilitation. So when Mujibur Rahman and other Awami League leaders intensified their accusations against the West Pakistani-dominated government, many Bengalis joined in the massive campaign rallies. Consequently, in the 1970 election, Mujibur Rahman's Awami League swept the polls in the East with 99% of the vote, winning almost all the seats available there. This gave the Awami League the absolute majority of seats in the assembly. But the Awami League won no seats in West Pakistan, where, as you'll recall, Zulfikar Ali Bhutto's Pakistan People's Party gained a majority. This election therefore posed a challenge to the long-standing West Pakistani dominance over the nation. Instead of accepting the results of the election he had authorized, General Yahya Khan suspended the assembly. After heated negotiations between Mujibur Rahman and Bhutto, and they broke down, the Pakistani army went in to crush the East Pakistani leadership and populace in the bloody Operation Searchlight. Millions of Bengali refugees fled to safety in neighboring India. Many of the refugee men were armed by India and allowed to return to the fighting as the Mukti Bahini, or Freedom Force guerrillas. However, pro-Pakistani Islamists, including many Bihari immigrants, allied with the Pakistan army. Many organized into the militant Razakars, a militia that stood accused of some of the worst atrocities. For example, the main university was surrounded and the students executed to try to wipe out the future educated leadership. Labor unions and other activists were also killed. Many women were sexually assaulted to break the spirit of Bengalis. All this fighting entailed mass killings, but the scale of the death remains highly disputed. Pakistani authorities have reluctantly admitted to about 300,000 killed, but many Bengalis claim 10 times that many died. The exact number will never be known, but the deep damage to Bangladesh's society and economy is undisputed. Finally, the Indian army invaded in support of the Mukti Bahini. Allied Indian and Bengali forces swiftly captured the entire Pakistan army in the east, about 100,000 men. Then the Indian army withdrew, leaving Bangladesh independent. Then the Bangladesh government and people had to create a new national identity following this third partition within 70 years. A prominent majority of Bangladesh's people are Bengali. However, this identity crosses over the border into Indian West Bengal. Historically, Bengali Muslims and Hindus have shared much. Indeed, the new national anthem chosen by Bangladesh was written by Sir Rabindranath Tagore, a Hindu Brahmin who also composed the Indian national anthem. If Bengali identity forms the nation, then what was the validity of the 1947 partition that created East Pakistan? Further, a Bengali identity for Bangladesh leaves out the small Adivasi and Bihari minorities. At the same time, a predominant majority of Bangladesh's population are Muslims. This includes most, but not all, Bengalis, plus Biharis. But Islamists have been discredited in people's eyes for having supported Pakistan in 1971. The Islamist militia was accused of massacres of Bengali nationalists. Various of these Islamist leaders were convicted 40 years afterwards, by a Bangladeshi so-called International Crimes Tribunal and executed. So a strongly Muslim identity questioned the validity of the 1971 partition. Further, it highlights deep political divides and also excludes millions of Bengali Hindus and mostly Christian Adivasis who are legally citizens of Bangladesh. These two factors have continued to compete in the national identity, one more inclusively Bengali and one more strongly Islamic. The former has led to more affinities with India, the other with a larger Muslim world. There are also powerful divisions within Bangladesh based on economic class. For many leftist citizens of the new nation of Bangladesh, the traumatic birth of their new nation represented new opportunities for radical restructuring. In his rhetoric, Mujibur Rahman had long promised social and economic reforms that would lead to the nationalization of industries and the expansion of public services, and would prioritize the reduction of economic inequality. Many of the freedom-fighting Mukti Bahini and progressive politicians had dedicated their lives to this vision. But after independence, the pace of economic redistribution was not extensive enough for many on the left. As the premier leader of the struggle for independence, Mujibur Rahman was widely respected. He stood forth as provisional president at independence and then chose to be elected prime minister. Ever since, Bangladesh has wavered between a British-style parliamentary democracy and a strong executive presidential form of government. However, while Mujibur Rahman was considered honest, many people regarded his administration as ineffective and corrupt, economically and morally. This disordered economy was made worse by a vast famine of 1973-74, in which tens of thousands starved to death. Subsequently, Mujibur Rahman declared a state of emergency and consolidated power as the strongly executive president. And he amended the new constitution to make Bangladesh a one-party state. The militia loyal to him used force against his political opponents. In addition, many of the Mukti Bahini who had done the actual fighting believed that they had earned the right to places in the National Army. But trained career army officers and men, for their part, believed that the period of their marginalization by West Pakistani army commanders was over. It was their time to stand forth in command. So there were deep splits between these two factions in the new Bangladeshi Army Officer Corps. Bangladesh has subsequently suffered from literally hundreds of attempted military coups, although very few of them were actually successful. The first successful coup came in August 1975. A band of army officers assassinated Mujibur Rahman and most of his family. A daughter, Begum Sheikh Hasina, happened to be away from home at the time. She inherited the leadership of the Awami League and some of the prestige of her martyred father. As we'll see, Begum Hasina would be elected prime minister on three separate occasions, at least so far. Her party tends to stress the Bengali component of the national identity, and her policies have tended to be more favorable toward India. This 1975 coup against Mujibur Rahman was followed by a period of disruption and instability in the government. This only ended in 1977 when General Zia-ur Rahman consolidated power. General Zia-ur Rahman was a career officer who had migrated to West Pakistan in 1947. He was one of the very few Bengalis who rose up in the Pakistani army. But in 1971, he fought against that army to liberate his Bangladesh. Once in office, General Zia-ur Rahman held an election in 1978 that confirmed his presidency. His model for Bangladesh moved away from Mujibur Rahman's secular socialism in favor of more free market development and toward Islam. He also organized a political party, the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, or BNP, to institutionalize his support. But he was assassinated in 1981 in an attempted coup by rival military officers. His BNP party and cause were inherited by his widow, Begum Khalida Zia. So far, she has been elected twice Bengali's prime minister, and she is still the leading opposition figure. Her party tends to stress the Islamic component of national identity, often allying with explicitly Islamist parties, and her policies have tended to be less favorable toward India. Following the instability of General Zia-ur Rahman's assassination, General Hossein Muhammad Irshad led yet another army coup in 1982 as chief martial law administrator and then as president. A career army officer, he had been imprisoned during the 1971 war, but then rose under General Zahraman's patronage. In order to organize support, General Irshad created a new political party, the Jatayu Party. This party won controversial elections in 1986 and 1987, but has remained a relatively minor player in the larger battle between the Awami League of Begum Hosseini and the BNP of Begum Khalida Zia. Indeed, General Irshad faced growing popular protests led by these other political parties. Finally, unable to govern, he was forced to resign in 1990. This has become a frequent occurrence in Bangladesh. The opposition rallies large numbers of people who find the current government unsupportable, forcing a regime change. General Irshad was put on trial and convicted, but he continued to lead his Jatayu Party in various election alliances. In the elections of 1991 that followed General Irshad's resignation, Begum Khalida Zia's coalition won enough seats to make her prime minister. But street protests by the opposition forced her to have a neutral caretaker government run the 1996 election. Next, Sheikh Hasina's Awami League and its allies won enough seats to elect her prime minister. But once again, growing street protests by the opposition led to a neutral caretaker government running the 2001 election. This was won by Begum Khalida Zia's BNP, leading to a coalition of four parties, including the Jamaat-e-Islami, an Islamist Bangladeshi party. This time, growing street protests by the opposition were ended by another army coup. Since 1988, the Bangladesh Army has provided the largest number of troops to the United Nations peacekeeping forces around the world, more than 10,000 troops to nearly 50 missions. This gave them better training, equipment, and financing than Bangladesh could itself afford. So in this 2007 coup, the army command decided to purge the nation of election irregularities and end the pattern of one begum succeeded by the other. The army appointed as its advisor a technocrat with experience as a World Bank economist, Farouqeddin Ahmad. For 2 years of military rule, this regime created a new system of identification cards for all citizens. This allowed the removal of spurious names and deceased voters from the voter rolls. However, when the elections were held late in 2008, Begum Hasina's Awami League alliance won a decisive victory, reinstating her as prime minister. Her regime was overwhelmingly re-elected in 2014, largely because the BNP and its allies boycotted the election, hoping in vain to discredit it. For her part, Prime Minister Begum Hasina has tried to break up the Islamist movement within Bangladesh. In 2009, her government created an international crimes tribunal to investigate the mass deaths at Independence and put alleged collaborators with Pakistan on trial. About a dozen have been found guilty of crimes against humanity during the 1971 war, with several executed so far. Many see this as overdue, delayed justice. Others as mortal vindictiveness by the current government against its political opponents, the BNP and the Jamaat-e-Islami. There have been international critiques of the tribunal's procedures and, within Bangladesh, widespread and often violent protests against these trials. But some pressing issues are beyond the power of Bangladesh alone to address. For example, over the next decades, rising sea levels are expected to flood permanently about a sixth of the entire nation, displacing tens of millions of people with no space elsewhere in Bangladesh for them to live. We'll consider some of these current conditions for Bangladesh and for South Asia as a whole in our final lecture.